This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop.
We have breaking news of another woman accusing Michigan Democratic Congressman John Conyers of sexual misconduct. Correspondent Peter Ducey is live again on Capitol Hill. This news breaking just minutes after your last report. Peter.
Brett, BuzzFeed has published a link to some court documents tonight where a former scheduler for John Conyers at his office here in Washington, D.C., over across the Capitol in the Rayburn building, says that Conyers made five direct attempts to use his position as a member of Congress to try to get her to go home with him. Now, some of the things that she's also alleging, that he tried to hold her hand on the way to a White House event, which she says she did not want. This woman also says that Conyers, over the span of a couple months, was constantly rubbing her shoulders, kissing her forehead, and asking him to come to Detroit. She says that this caused such severe stress and so many chest pains, she needed to leave the office. She did initially try to file this suit, but then she withdrew the lawsuit once the court clerks told her that she was not going to be able to keep it under seal. So we still do not know this woman's identity. We know a lot about her job and about the experience that she had based on what she says happened to her in this lawsuit, but we do not yet have Conyers' side of this. I tried to call his Washington, D.C. office. They said that the mailbox was full over there, and I got an answering service at his Detroit office where I was told that everybody who could possibly speak to us was already gone for the night, Brett.
Yeah, Peter, I mean, these court documents say that she alleges that she suffered unwanted touching by the Democrat, quote, repeatedly and daily, and she abandoned the lawsuit after they denied her motion to seal the complaint. I mean, it seems like they're going to have to react to that, too.
Right, and again, remember today when the Associated Press knocked on Conyers' door and he answered, he gave this statement that he initially had to walk back because he thought that the Associated Press was asking him about recent allegations, and then he had to come out and say, well, I thought you were talking about something more recent than the 2015 lawsuit than I settled. Now, does this count, 2016, as recent? We don't know. But again, we just got these documents a few minutes ago. We still don't know the identity of the plaintiff, and we are hoping to hear back from the Conyers office at some point soon, Brett.
All part and parcel of that alleged, not alleged, reportedly, $17 million that have been paid out these past number of years for sexual harassment there on Capitol Hill. And, of course, the thing that galls us all is that that's our money. It's the people's money that has been directed to, you know, kind of become the hush fund for these this miscreant behavior. And at the risk, and I hesitate here a bit because I don't want to make this into a political thing, because clearly it's not. This is a cultural issue. I mean, when you have something like this taking place all the way from Hollywood to the Capitol Hill, and in businesses across the country, dare I say, with this campaign, as we talked about yesterday, the hashtag MeToo, it has really opened the gate up and given women the freedom. And there are some minor stories by comparison, you know, of men being sexually harassed as well. Those are not being heavily reported, but it runs across all genders here. But predominantly, of course, I think this has been a pent up situation for many years that many people, businesses, companies, institutions have not wanted to address. And I say this is a good thing. I know this is problematic and it's becoming political in some areas because that's all they know is politics. But this is about humanity. This is about brothers and sisters. This is about we the people. And I say let's address this thing. yes, it stinks to high heaven, and there's a lot of pain and suffering that we're going to have to get through. But I pray that we would do this in a spirit of honesty and in pursuit of the truth that will really open this thing up once and for all and get it cleaned out. Could that be possible? Stay tuned. The conversation continues. Bruce Kaufman coming up next right here on Bill Martinez Live.
Have you ever wondered who the second person to discover gravity was? When you're in the mood for a treat, would you go to the second best bakery in town? Or how about the name John Breckenridge? Recognize it? If you don't, that's because he came in second to Abraham Lincoln. The firsts are first for a reason. Just how ID Stronghold was the first to create the technology to protect your credit cards from thieves with RFID chip scanners. ID Stronghold products block signals from those scanners, so thieves can't capture your critical data. Get a stronghold on your personal information and protect your family too. Don't settle for the second best wallet. Pick up ID Stronghold wallets for everyone on your list this holiday season. They're the perfect stocking stuffer, with leather wallets starting as low as $20 on Walmart.com, eBay, Amazon, and QVC. Save 10% by using coupon code PRESENT for a limited time. That's coupon code PRESENT, only on IDStronghold.com. IDStronghold.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody,
and it's 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Welcome back. I am Bill Martinez. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. And if you're so inclined and you want to drop me an email, we'd love to hear from you. Good, bad, indifferent, let us know. Hey, get it off your chest. No need to drag it around. Hey, you can give it to me straight. I can handle it. I can handle the truth. Okay, so Bill at BillMartinezLive.com. Speaking of the truth, we had a real special guest coming up. When you hear the name Zapruder, I know exactly where your mind goes to. If you had any recollection whatsoever of the JFK assassination. Well, Alexandra Zapruder joins us. She began her career on the founding staff of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., a graduate of Smith College. She later earned her master's degree in education at Harvard University, author of Salvage Pages, Young Writers' Diaries of the Holocaust, which won the National Jewish Book Award in the Holocaust category. Also served as the guest curator for an exhibition of original diaries at the Holocaust Museum in Houston. Alexandra, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you on. I mean, you know, just your own career and all that you've been able to accomplish and to keep, you know, history alive the way you have has really honored your family. And we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, about the Zapruder film, of which is part of your familial heritage. This has to be somewhat of an influence and driving force in your whole life, has it not been?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, I grew up in a family in which we very rarely talked about the film. And, of course, mm-hmm. I knew from an early age, you know, I knew that our name was well known and I knew why. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I really understood the significance of the film and its importance in American life until I grew up and until I decided to write this book about it. And so the book that I wrote first about the Holocaust was really driven by, you know, a deep love of history and curiosity about the past. And it may be that in some way that came about through our connection to the film, but not in any way that I, you know, that is very specific or that I could really identify, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I want to get into a little bit more of the genesis, and that is your family and your, you know, your grandfather and this tradition. And I mean, here you are, you're writing about the Holocaust and, you know, you're educated, you're going to colleges and you're in classrooms with other kids, some that believe the Holocaust never happened, that it's all fake news. And here you are, you go head to head with this and realizing that, you know, there's more to this story than just some emotional response that says, oh, this never happened.
Of course. And I was very fortunate to be on the founding staff of the Holocaust Museum because that was a place where, you know, scholarship and rigorous study and thought was valued very highly. And of course, what we were all doing was gathering, gathering evidence of this enormous crime. And of course, unlike the Kennedy assassination, when it comes to deniers of the Holocaust, I almost think that you just can't even take it seriously. There's such an overwhelming amount of evidence and records that the idea of denying the Holocaust is completely nonsensical. Whereas with the Kennedy assassination, there are reasonable people can disagree within a certain realm of conversation about what did or didn't happen. And then, of course, there are the outliers who are, who cling to conspiracy theories that don't make a lot of sense. But that seems to be the way that our world has evolved more and more with every passing year, it seems.
Well, let's talk about your grandfather. Who was Abraham Zapruder?
He was a Russian immigrant. He came to this country at age 15 in 1920. He came from Imperial Russia, a Jewish family, very much oppressed and persecuted there, and they were extremely poor, very limited means and opportunity. And so he, like millions of other immigrants to this country, came and made a life for himself. He went to night school and taught himself, learned English, went to work in the garment industry on 7th Avenue as a pattern maker, and then ultimately, worked his way up. He married my grandmother, and he eventually, in the early 1940s, they moved to Dallas for a business opportunity. And after, many ups and downs over the years, he really, he managed to reach the middle class. And, it's just a very archetypal story of, a poverty-stricken immigrant without an education who came here and, gradually, found the upward mobility for which America is famous. So that was the story of his early life. He was someone who he loved music. He never had lessons, but he could play almost anything by ear. He particularly loved the piano. And he loved gadgets. He loved cameras and home movies, of course, but also he was sort of known in the family for always kind of, very happily playing with the sprinklers and wiring things around the house. He was very good with his hands, and his favorite thing to read was Popular Mechanics. He was a really an interesting, a very interesting person with a lot of interests and a lot of curiosities. And, I'm sorry I never knew him. He died when I was a baby, but I've heard wonderful stories about him my whole life.
Yeah, well, I can tell. It still warms your heart, though. You had that direct contact, but yet, so much of his story continues. And as you talk proudly of his experience as an immigrant and how he pulled himself up, and he and your grandmother to accomplish what they've done, and how they set the rest of the family in motion. This is a typical immigration story where, people were chased out of their home country. They come here and find America. They assimilate and work hard. And that is a story that is consistent, I have found, with immigrants who have gone on and enjoyed success like your grandfather. So it is very typical in that sense, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that they were, they believed very deeply in America. They loved America, and they believed in everything that it stood for. And for them, that was synonymous with, a set of progressive values about welcoming the stranger and about, making this country a place where people could come and succeed. And of course, nothing embodied that more than President Kennedy and the idea of, this young president who saw so much promise and potential, who asked so much of Americans. That was how they saw him. And, they were Roosevelt Democrats first, and then they were, Kennedy supporters when the time came. And I think that had everything to do with where, with where he came from and his background.
Yeah, and you mentioned, welcoming the stranger. What comes to mind is also, the character of Jewish people. It was like, it was within their DNA, as God said, look at, because you were once aliens in a foreign land, you need to be welcoming to people as well. And that seems to transition and carry through the Jewish culture as well. Am I right?
Absolutely, 100%. And that those values were very deeply ingrained in my grandfather and my grandmother and my mother's family too, and all the way down to us and our, you know, children. I think it is very much part of, you know, the Jewish concept of, you know, what is right and what.
We got to take a quick break here, Alexandra.
Okay.
So stay with us. We've got more from Alexandra Zabruder on the other side of the break. Stay with us. 15 minutes after the top of the hour right now.
Want revenge on the common housefly? Well, after 10,000 years, someone has finally come up with a better way. The Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic and no batteries required. So much fun, you'll forget you have a wife and kids. $39.95 and free economy shipping. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Makes the perfect stocking stuffer. Get your Bug Assault today.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder. Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body. Why take another pill? Treat your aches and pains with Sunshine Pillows. Microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body heating wraps. Sunshine Pillows and wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it, even while driving. Sunshine Pillows are designed with your comfort in mind, will not burn you, and will stay balanced on your body to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunshine Pillows start at just $20. Join hundreds of our happy customers and see why Sunshine Pillows has a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. Click sunshine-pillows.com and take the Sunshine Pillow Challenge. That's sunshine-pillows.com.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live. It's always a great day here at Bill Martinez Live.
19 minutes after the top of the hour, Bill Martinez here, just the way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. We're talking with Alexandra Zapruder, her brand new book, 26 Seconds, A Personal History of the Zapruder Film. When you hear the name Zapruder, it takes you right there. The cover of her new book captures, I think, one of those, you know, that iconic moment that was part of the 26 seconds taken by her grandfather, Abraham Zapruder. Amazing, Alexandra, that, you know, even on that cover, you see that, and it's like you get all 26 seconds in that one shot, the cover of your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think those images are so iconic now, and mm-hmm. You know, they call to mind so many things. You just need to see that green grass and the black limousine and Jackie and the pink, you know, suit. And it just takes you back to, you know, this turning point in American life. It's remarkable.
Well, you mentioned that your grandfather, Abraham Zapruder, was a tinkerer, but also that, you know, he loved to take pictures. And so what was happening for him? How did he find himself there on that day and that moment with a camera?
You know, he had been taking home movies since the mid-1930s, which is really quite early. He started the first home movies that we have that he took were of my aunt as an infant. And so he was quite a good home movie, you know, amateur photographer. And he mm-hmm. had intended to... His office, where Jennifer Junior's, which was his dress manufacturing company, was located just adjacent to Dealey Plaza. Mm-hmm. So he knew that the president's motorcade was going to pass very nearby his office. So he planned to go down that morning or around midday to try to see if he could get the president and the first lady on film. He had ended up actually leaving his camera home that morning. I guess he changed his mind or he was hesitating, and it was his longtime assistant Lillian Rogers who sent him home, convinced him to go home and get it. Mm-hmm. And he got back in time to go down, and he scouted a couple of different locations. He was looking for, you know, the right vantage point. He ended up climbing up on a 4-foot high sort of ledge.
Mm-hmm.
He had vertigo, so he asked his receptionist Marilyn to stand behind him
mm-hmm.
and to steady him if he got dizzy. He was worried if following the motorcade and looking through the zoom lens that he might get dizzy and fall. And so he got himself in position and waited for the motorcade to come in order to you know, get this moment on film.
So here, you know, here he is, you know, kind of the reluctant photographer, and who was to know what he was about to capture?
Yeah, he, you know, he later said that he sort of couldn't make sense of what he was seeing as he saw it, you know, even though he was looking through the viewfinder. But of course, when the final shot came, the shot that struck the president in the head,
mm-hmm.
he knew immediately that the president was dead and that there was absolutely mm-hmm. no way that the president could have survived, which put him in a, you know, in a very traumatic position because no one around him knew what had happened. And he said later that he got down off of that ledge and he was screaming. He was completely distraught, saying that the president was dead. And within 15 minutes or so, he was approached by a reporter on Dealey Plaza who asked him, you know, whether if he had caught what had happened on film.
Mm.
And at that moment, I think he kind of snapped out of his, the state that he was in. And he said to this reporter, Harry McCormick, that he needed to speak to the federal authorities. And so that is what set in motion the chain of events for the rest of the day, in which, you know, it took all day, ended up, meeting up with Forrest Sorrells, the head of the Secret Service in Dallas, and then eventually taking most of the day to get the film developed and get copies made
mm-hmm.
For the Secret Service. So it was a long and traumatic day for him, but I think it seems to me that his main focus was making sure that he got the film developed and making sure that the federal authorities had access to it.
Yeah, because you don't know until you know, right? I mean, you think you've caught it, but until
right.
We're talking the days when, you know, you had to develop the film, and there it is, and you know, and this is his property, but yet he's working. I mean, he's volunteering, working with the authorities on this, and gosh, I gotta imagine what other dynamics took place in terms of, you know, because there's so much conspiracy about everything that happened that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what your grandfather must have been subjected to, or was it just a straight up kind of thing where you look at, I think I've got something here, and, you know,
yeah,
that he felt like, go ahead.
Yeah, I think at the time, you know, in the immediate, I think the conspiracies and the, you know, suspicions and some veiled or not so veiled accusations came much later. I think at the time, you know, of course, Dallas was in a state of complete chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The Secret Service was, you know, not at all prepared for this to happen. And it was a local, you know, Secret Service outfit. It wasn't the you know, headquarters. So these
right.
were people who, you know, were doing the best they could under the circumstances, but, you know, were completely overloaded with trying to gather evidence and the like. And, of course, then Oswald, you know, was arrested for having shot J.D. Tippit later in the day. It's not very long after.
Mm.
So there just was so much going on. I think for my grandfather, I think in that moment, you know, he was cooperating with the federal authorities. I often think that had Forrest Worrells asked him for the camera with the film in it, and simply taken it, he would have, there's no doubt in my mind that he would have simply turned it over. But that's not what happened. They didn't ask for it. They just said, you know, would you give us a copy? So by the end of the day, he went home with the original film and his camera and, one copy of it. And he then had to figure out what to do with this, because simultaneous to the effort to get the film developed and contending with the federal authorities, the media got wind of this film, and so there was, you know, the beginnings of what would become, you know, an incredibly, you know, overwhelming pressure to sell the film to somebody in the media and make it available to the American people. So he was really caught, I think, in the crosshairs of, you know, so to speak, a number of different pressures that, you know, nothing in his life really could have prepared him for that, although he was, I think, you know, a man of tremendous character and, you know, steady in his nerves and focused on doing the right thing as best he could. And I think that's what guided him in that immediate aftermath.
I got to imagine, you know, after he develops the film, he makes a copy and he realizes as much as he could. I mean, he's not an FBI agent. He's a witness to this incredible event, the assassination of the president, and he's got to feel like, wait, I've got something greater than myself in my hands here. What am I to do with this? What kind of responsibility do I have, right?
100%. That is absolutely what he struggled with. And, you know, the choices he made in the immediate aftermath were shaped exactly by that question of, you know, of what to do with it. And I certainly am happy to, you know, to tell you about that. I mean, it was a difficult set of decisions for him, a moral dilemma in terms of profiting financially, et cetera. So,
well, we got to go to break, Alexander. We come back. I do want to get your sentiment, your perspective on that, because I can only imagine what he must have been dealing with. And you think about if this would happen in today's environment, different story altogether, without a doubt. 29 minutes after the top of the hour. More from Alexander after this.
When did your light bulb go off? We're talking about that idea you have for a new product or app. Listen, if you want to make your idea a priority, but you don't know how to get it off the ground, you call Davison, the one company with over 25 years experience and exclusive process that turns ideas into products and apps that are found in retail stores and online. Our team has helped tens of thousands of people, just like you. Call now and ask for our free idea starter guide. We'll show you how to securely get started and protect your idea. Whether you have a patent or not, our process will get your idea ready to get in front of a corporation. Don't let your light bulb of an idea go out. Call Davison now for your free idea starter guide. Davison charges fees for services. 800-211-8392. 800-211-8392. 800-211-8392. Again, that's 800-211-8392.
Does the current world crisis in North Korea or our domestic crisis right here in America concern you? Well, I know it concerns me. My friends over at Legacy Food Storage have solutions in the event there's the inevitable. What's the inevitable? Civil unrest, a run on your local grocery store. And here's my question to you. If this happens, how do you feed your children? How do you feed your grandchildren? Legacy Food Storage has the solutions. In fact, they can help you implement a simple plan to take care of your needs in the event of the inevitable. By calling them right now, I have authorized them to give you a special 20% discount at checkout by simply using GCN. Call 888-543-7345 or visit them at legacyfoodstorage.com. That's 888-543-7345 or visiting them at legacyfoodstorage.com. Make sure you use GCN at checkout for an incredible 20% discount. Don't be a victim. Take control of your life now.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
And I thank you for believing in me and giving me your all, and now I'll never be alone. I thank you, you never love me.
It's always a great day here at Bill Martinez live.
Back with the American 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here with you. We're talking 26 Seconds, a personal history of the Zapruder film with the granddaughter of Abraham Zapruder, the man responsible for capturing those iconic 26 seconds that are emblazoned in our memory. And, you know, the thing is so incredible about this, Alexandra, is that this is beyond generations. This is just crossed over, you know, from one generation to the next. This is how powerful and iconic this 26 seconds is, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's interesting because I think what ended up happening over the decades as the film, you know, gradually made its way into the public is that it somehow kind of stands in as a sort of collective memory of a traumatic event. So even if you weren't there, you are able to see what happened and the pathos of that moment, you know, this young president and his beautiful wife and, you know, with their future before them and all the promise of the country. And then suddenly within, you know, half of a minute, less even, all of that gets, you know, interrupted by this bullet and so violently brought to an end. And I think it's just sort of held on to people's imaginations for all that it represents, not only the moment itself, but also, you know, just the idea of American promise and how things, you know, really went off the rails after that happened.
Well, we all want it to be a settled question.
Even with the release here recently of more documents, President Trump is releasing them, which was by law saying that they were all to be released. Of course, we knew there was going to be redaction involved, and there's still not all of them. But, we say often in the show, in the absence of fact, opinion rules, and it's all over the place. And even with this 26 seconds, this infamous Zapruder film, which was, really a big part of the movie, JFK, and how Kevin Costner, as his role as the lead attorney there, talking about, and the film was a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
A depiction
right.
of it.
And I think one of the things that's so interesting about the film is that, it is both a visual record of the assassination, but it doesn't provide a universal consensus on what happened. And so there's sort of this built-in contradiction. You know, you can look at it and look at it and look at it, and people keep seeing different things. And one of the things I thought about a lot in the last week, when the new documents came out and there were all these questions about, conspiracy theories, is that, there comes a point where we have to wonder what question we're really trying to answer. Are we really trying to answer the question of what exactly happened to the president, or are we trying to somehow come to terms with how this could have happened and come to terms with this national wound that seems unable to heal? And I think we're so far past the point where, you could take 50 people and they would all look at the Zapruder film and see the same thing. But, really all you need to see is that, the president was murdered and the country has spent the last, 5 decades reeling from that.
Exactly.
And I
think that it blocks our maturation and our ability to move forward, which is what you're suggesting, because it's like we're stuck in 1963 because of this. And this is the problem with deception and the untruth. The truth does set you free, and we are enslaved by this 26 seconds. Because we don't know the truth, or even what we do know. Some people will say, well, the Warren Commission spelled it out. That's it. End of story. But it's not gospel according to, I think general consensus.
Yeah, I think there is so much debate about what actually took place. And as I said, I think, within a certain range, I think reasonable people can disagree about what took place. And then there is a lot of static and a lot of noise on the extremes that, it makes the conversation impossible. You find yourself, and I certainly experienced this in doing the research on this book, you find yourself batting away, absolutely crazy theories that really don't have any evidence. And it's almost like, what's the point of doing that? What are we really trying to understand? And also at this point, what does it really matter? I mean, the implications of the president's assassination are more than clear. Mm-hmm. And so how will it change anything if we know exactly which bullet, came from? Anyway, I mean, I understand why people believe that knowing whether or not it was a conspiracy is important. I do understand that. But I also think that what you said is right, that there's a way in which we're stuck in a set of questions that might be preventing us from gaining a deeper understanding.
I think ultimately it's scary for people because you think, could your government be involved in taking out the president of the United States? That's a scary idea. And
that
people are freaked
idea.
Out over it. Right.
That is a scary idea. But you know what's equally scary is that a loser with a $12 rifle can take out a head of state.
Right.
It's all scary.
Yeah.
That's one of the things about the film is that no matter how you interpret it, it's terrifying that something of that magnitude could happen that suddenly and with no warning, and that there could be so many consequences. You're absolutely right. It's terrifying to think that it was a conspiracy, and it's terrifying to think that it wasn't a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some positive takeaways, as you say, from this, and that is that democracy lived on. even mm-hmm. in spite of, as I say, we're stuck. I think we're still stuck in the 60s because of this. And this is why, I mean, for us, you know, our, you know, credo here on the show is to pursue the truth no matter where it leads. And, mm-hmm. and experience has taught me over the years, Alexandra, is that when we avoid the truth, it's debilitating. And, you know, 7 out of 10 Americans say we're on the wrong track and we're kind of lost and probably in a more chaotic sense of being than ever we were in the 60s and through the 70s. And it's because I think we're off the mark. And I believe that if we get reconnected with the truth again, you know, we can handle the truth. You know, we can understand, okay, this is what happened. Let's move on. Whatever traumatic incident has occurred for us, you know, historically speaking. And I think we can grow and positively adjust. But, you know, we just cannot have a government that says, you know, we know better than you do and we're going to protect you. You know, this is a government mm-hmm. of for, by, we the people. I maintain that. And I believe your grandfather did as well. We mentioned, you know, right before we went to break last time, we're coming up to another break here. But, you know, the things that your grandfather had to deal with in turning over the film and, you know, some of the political machinations that were involved with him having something, you know, that was so telling about the assassination. Tell us about that.
Well, the biggest problem for my grandfather was that he was very afraid that the film was going to be exploited or sensationalized. Mm-hmm. You know, that was his big fear. And his big fear was that it was going to bring further harm to the Kennedy family. And yet, at the same time, you know, I think he struggled on a personal moral level because he understood that the film, he understood because of the way that the media was reacting that the film had a financial value. And, you know, he had grown up incredibly poor, very insecure about, you know, financial stability, and suddenly he found himself in something of possession that could potentially bring a measure of financial security to himself and his family. And yet, to sell it for money felt like it was, you know, morally wrong and
yes.
flawed. And wow. so he really, that was the gist of the struggle, and he tried his best to find a middle ground.
Exactly. Well, let's talk yeah. about how he came to that middle ground when we come back. More from Alexandra Zapruder. We're talking 26 Seconds, her new book on Bill Martinez Live.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-617-9312. 800-617-9312. 800-617-9312.
This report is brought to you by Takeda Pharmaceuticals USA and Lundbeck US. On October 10th, World Mental Health Day, people recognize the importance of mental health globally. This year's theme is mental health in the workplace, and for the millions living with major depressive disorder, commonly known as depression, getting through the workday can be a challenge. In a national Gallup survey, employees who reported having depression missed an estimated 8.7 workdays annually, while employees who did not have depression missed about half as many days. Dr. John Zajeka, professor of psychiatry and director of the Women's Board Depression Treatment and Research Center at Rush University Medical Center, has treated people with depression, including working moms, and knows how much it can affect their daily life.
Like all patients with depression, working moms should be sure to discuss all of their depression-related symptoms with their doctor. I have treated many working mothers. Depression symptoms can impact both their personal and professional lives. Open and ongoing communication with their doctor is key to finding an appropriate treatment plan.
While depression is often associated with feeling down or losing interest, depression can also impact one's ability to sleep, concentrate, and even cause one to move or speak slowly, which can impact everyday life, including at the workplace. People experiencing symptoms of depression should speak with a doctor about treatment options. To join an online community focused on sharing information about depression, visit Lighter Blue on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Craig Samet, Chief Clinical Officer from Anthem. Every new parent dreams of bringing their baby home for the first time. But some babies are born too sick or too soon to come home right away. That's why the Anthem Foundation supports the life-saving research and programs of the March of Dimes, the leading nonprofit organization for pregnancy and baby health. Help us give every baby a fighting chance so that more babies can come home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.org.
Have you checked your ECS lately? We have. We are New Pharma, scientists who specialize in human functions controlled by the endocannabinoid system, or ECS. Let me simplify. Your ECS is involved in physiological processes like appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and immune systems. New Pharma's patent-pending science is the big difference in our natural solutions, formulated for your well-being. For example, our foundation product provides targeted nutrition to support a healthy endocannabinoid system, which is directly responsible for managing and controlling inflammation. This product contains turmeric, which is known as one of the best anti-inflammatories on the planet. Our allergies product contains sage, which is a very effective decongestant. See all of our amazing capsules, essential oils, and ECS herbal teas at GNUPHARMA.com. New Pharma. Your path to wellness begins here.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original, most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Someone once said, live free or die, right? Bill Martinez, live.
Year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians and a great abundance of food. We thank God for our homes and our food and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world with freedom and justice.
Amen. Bill Martinez, live.
Yeah, but where are the tortillas? You know, that's what we want. You know, it's like, got to have some tortillas, you know, homemade tortillas. 14 minutes, that's a whole other story. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back. We're talking with Alexandra Zapruder, her brand new book, 26 Seconds, A Personal History of the Zapruder Film. Alexandra, you know, to be in the position that you're in, not only as a historian, but this is personal. I mean, this is like, you're the family historian here.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about what you were saying before the break about, you know, nothing, about not having anything, you know, to fear and the truth. And I was thinking, you know, for this book, unlike my first book, you know, whenever you look into your own family history and you, you know, try to understand the motivations and actions of people that you love, there's a, you know, there's a bit of a rift there. You know, you don't know what you're going to find. And in our family, there was a lot of silence around the film. And I think some of the, you know, questions around profiting financially from the film led to, you know, a feeling that it was best just not to talk about it because it was too difficult and too uncomfortable. And so really what I wanted to do in this book was to, you know, bring these issues to light, not so much to judge my family for what they did, but to try to understand and also to try to understand the other side and to create a record of the film that could be passed on to the next generation so that they would not inherit, you know, this silence or this sense of doubt about, you know, who we are and what we did. And I think that turned out to be an incredibly gratifying aspect of the work for me.
Well, your grandfather really could, you know, as you said, he was in a bit of a moral dilemma here. You know, thinking, all right, well, I've, you know, grew up poor. I've worked hard all my life. You know, this is my shot at it, you know, secure my family. And, you know, this falls in his lap. This is, in a sense, you know, a blessing from God. He probably thought, you know, here I am. I mean, of all the people, I'm the only one of all the thousands of people that were there that day. And I've captured these iconic 26 seconds. Why shouldn't I be able to, you know, draw some personal benefit from that?
Right. Well, I think that he really felt that, you know, I think anybody can understand, mm-hmm. you know, that temptation. I think on the other hand, you know, he said many times, and I believe that he meant it, that he would have given anything to not have been the person who caught that moment on film. And he would have, you know, happily not had the financial, you know, opportunity if it had meant that he could have been freed from the burden and the trauma of having been in that situation. But I think he, you know, did his utmost in that moment to find a balance. You know, mm-hmm. he sold the film to Life Magazine, which was an organization that he felt that he could trust. Mm-hmm. You know, he made sure that in the contract with Life Magazine that the copyright to the film would be protected and defended so that it wouldn't get out and be exploited by, you know, unscrupulous people. And he, you know, requested that Life Magazine treat the film always with dignity and good taste, which is a clause, an actual clause in the contract, which is such a kind of throwback to a time that is almost hard to imagine. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, when he was paid this $150,000 for the rights to the film, he gave the first installment of it, which was $25,000, to the widow of J.D. Tippit, who was the police officer that was shot in the movie theater. And so I think he tried to find a way to, you know, do something good with the money that he got and make sure that he was, you know, that the way that Life Magazine handled the film would reflect his values, but also, you know, accepted whatever guilt might come with the money in the hopes that, you know, it might someday help his own family.
Now, did Life Magazine, in your assessment, did they help or hinder the understanding of what happened on that fateful day?
You know, I think that Life Magazine, it's very interesting because Life Magazine was, at the time, you know, their main concern was sort of an editorial one. There was a sense that showing this film to the American people, that it was too violent, it was disrespectful to the memory of the president and to the presidency, and so they kept it from the American people for a long time. And I don't think that they did so. There's no evidence in the records that I looked through that they did so out of any political motivation, mm-hmm. you know, or any sense that, you know, there either was or wasn't a conspiracy to cover up. I think that they were doing it because they really reflected the cultural norms of the time.
Exactly.
But I do think that an unintended consequence of not having made it available earlier definitely fed the sense on a lot of people's parts that there was something to hide.
Yeah.
You know, this is about unintended consequences, about
exactly.
things that, you know, people did that ended up, you know, having results that no one could have anticipated.
Yeah, and you bring up an important part, and that is the love that the country had for JFK and for Jackie, you know, the family, you know, not knowing all the different story, whatever. It didn't matter. It was
sure.
just the country was in love with his family, the whole idea of Camelot and all that it represented. I mean, it was, wow. I mean, they were the king and queen of the United States. And, you know, as you said, whether it was your grandfather or others, it was, can we protect them? And then, of course, unfortunately, you start getting some of the National Enquirer photos, you know, of the president's body and that eked mm-hmm. out. And, you know, and that was hurtful. But I think it also should have been a key, whether it was Life Magazine or others that held and are still holding on to this information about the assassination, is that the people can't handle it. And often I find that the sooner we're able to handle it, the better it is, because then we can move on. But, you know, we are a nation of laws,
right.
And there is due process, right?
Right. Well, that is exactly right. I mean, I think that was very much the attitude on the part of Life Magazine. There was something a little bit paternalistic about their attitude, and it was very much a sign of the times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then by 1975, Life Magazine returned the film to our family. There was a lot of controversy around it, and there was a lot of aggravation, and they really didn't want to be responsible for it anymore. And so they returned the film to our family, and my father took on the responsibility of making it available to the American people. And he really had to grapple with, you know, this set of decisions about, you know, he didn't want to be in the position of being a censor and telling people that they couldn't see it. On the other hand, he didn't want it to be sensationalized or exploited. You know, so he had to you know, really struggled to find a balance, you know, because Life magazine really hadn't grappled with those issues. They simply didn't make it available. And then when, you know, by the time, you know, you get to the late 1970s and through the 80s, you know, times have changed. And the American public, you know, you cannot make the case anymore that the American public didn't have a right to see this film out of decorum. You know, that ship has sailed.
Exactly.
And well, so I think you're right. You know, now, of course, the film is available to anybody who has, you know, access to a computer and can see it on YouTube. I mean, there are no restrictions anymore, but it was certainly something that happened very gradually over a long period of time.
Well, this had to become a full-time job for your dad. You know, well, Life magazine says, hey, we're done. We don't want to handle this. This is back to the Zapruder family. And somebody has to take the lead on this, right?
It was the last thing in the world he wanted to do. You know, he was a tax attorney. He had a lot of interests. He was a great guy. He had three young kids at the time, myself and my two brothers. And, you know, he didn't want to be in the position of, you know, having to manage this and make these decisions and bear the criticism that you know, inevitably came along with it. But I think he lived up to that responsibility, feeling that was what, you know, his father by that time was gone. That was what his mother, my grandmother, felt, that, you know, that it should be back with the family. And so, you know, he did the very best he could, but I know that it was something that caused him a lot of pain and, you know, a lot of stress, because it just wasn't, it was very uncomfortable. And the memory of the assassination was personally painful for him, and it was painful for him to remember his father in that way. So I think it was very unwelcome, but he certainly did the best he could.
You know, talking about the environment and the media, you address in your book, you know, the dynamic with Dan Rather and his actions regarding the film. We've got about a minute and a half left. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, Dan Rather was at the time a hungry, aggressive young reporter, and he did what a lot of hungry, aggressive young reporters did at the time. You know, that story about Dan Rather is almost more interesting for what it reveals about how different Richard Stolle, the reporter from Life magazine, was. Mm-hmm. Because they were all like that. They all wanted to get their hands on the film. You know, they all wanted to, you know, make their careers, further their careers if they could. You know, Dan Rather has, in the decades since, I think, you know, done many great things, and he's certainly redeemed himself, in my view, in the last few years, you know, by being a voice of reason. But I think it just really, really shows the media climate and the pressure that my grandfather was facing in that moment. You know, a lot of people wanting to get their hands on this film at any price.
Exactly. Well, Alexandra Zapruder has been with us. Her brand new book, 26 Seconds, all about that iconic film and the story behind it. What do you want people to take away from this, Alexandra, after all is said and done?
You know, I think that the story of the film is the story of the second half of the 20th century in America.
Yes.
You know, this is a story about the assassination in the film in one sense, but it's also about some of the really most important issues that we've grappled with around media ethics, around morality, around, you know, what the public has the right to see and know, around, you know, cultural norms changing, technology. I mean,
exactly.
You know, there's so many parts to it. So I hope that if people read the book, they will find much that is of interest in it.
Kiyosaki, Rogers, and Schiff all concur there's an economic calamity that'll be facing this country. My question to you is, do you know when, and are you prepared? Most people don't, but my friends over at Republic Monetary Exchange have been leading experts in precious metals to help you offset the coming economic collapse. Right now, for a limited time, they have a free book called The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. You simply need to give them a call at 888-772-2929 to get that in your hands. Do not allow the insiders to do what they did to you in 2008, putting your IRAs, 401ks, and savings in jeopardy. You need this book, and you need it now. The 10 Reasons You Should Own Gold. Call 888-772-2929. That's 888-772-2929. There's a reason that the largest investment banking company in the world, J.P. Morgan, just purchased another 50 million ounces of silver. This free book will explain it. 888-772-2929.
Most people think